we started this meta-analysis, and we put in 2 years of doing this intensive literature search to see whether sperm count had declined. And the bottom line was yes, showing up in infertility, testosterone decline, and even miscarriage.
This is the Man Up Podcast, a doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics in men's health. You have questions that you are too afraid to ask, we have the answers. This week, our episode is titled, Future Fertility Fears Part 1, Are Sperm Counts Declining with Dr. Shauna Swan. I'm Dr. Kevin Chun. I'm joined as always by my co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. How are things going in Miami, buddy?
Everything's going great. No complaints. I think this is going to be coming out the week of Passover. So I'm wishing everyone a happy Passover for those who celebrate. I will be going up to Boca, the seminal trip to Boca to hang out with my grandfather and the other Jews. So it will be an excellent time. How are you doing?
Happy Passover to you.
Thank you very much. It's actually one of my favorite holidays. I mean, I love matzo ball soup. Just great food. I'm a gefilte fish guy, by the way. Big gefilte fish guy. All in on the gefilte fish. Have you had
it? I'm going to say, I don't think I've ever had it.
Well, the jarred stuff's kind of gross, but I still like it. But my grandmother used to make it like handmade, and it was incredible. Wow. It was incredible. And my mom made it like one time, but she was like, this takes way too much work. I'm not going to do this anymore. But like, I don't blame her. I mean, it's just like grinding up a lot of fish and all that stuff. But it's delicious. Great food. Passover rocks. So I'm happy about it.
First time I ever had matzo ball soup was in Miami.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought matzo ball soup was just like a comfort food for a lot of people. It's just like all over. It's in like diners and stuff.
Really?
Dude,
when I see comfort, I mean, look, me growing up, if there's comfort soup, it's chicken noodle. So I'm really not seeing much past that on a menu. I've never had matzo ball soup, dude.
All right. Well, I think my comfort soup is now pho, but that's besides the point.
Pho's great. Yeah. Pho's fantastic.
Better than ramen is my take, but 100%.
Depends on the ramen, but 100% of the time, I would say, or 95% of the time, I would say pho, just like I walk out of there and you're pretty confident that you're feeling great.
Yeah.
Ramen can be hit or miss depending on, you know, who's making it and all that stuff.
It's just more mild and it's a great hangover food. So it's just awesome. But let's get into this because I'm really excited for this guest. You know, we've been wanting to have her on for a while. Dr. Swan is really, you know, one of the thought leaders in this very, very hot topic of male fertility and the decline of male fertility over the last 50 years or so. Now, Dr. Swan, she's an award-winning scientist. She's published more than 200 scientific papers and has been featured in extensive media coverage around the world. You know, her appearances include ABC News, NBC Nightly News, 60 Minutes, CBS, PBS, BBC, NPR, Joe Rogan Experience.
All right.
As well as, you know, in magazines and newspapers. She's also the writer of a book, The Countdown, How Our Modern World is Threatening Sperm Counts, Altering Male and Female Reproductive Development, and the Imperiling the Future of the Human Race. In short, the book, The Countdown, I have read it. It is a fantastic read. I highly recommend anyone who's more interested in this topic, more interested in her kind of research, to give it a read. It's very thoughtfully done. But, you know, this idea of declining sperm, we briefly touched on it in our previous episode with Dr. Smith, who, you know, without going into as much detail as we do in this episode, does have comments saying he's not surprised if rates are declining.
You know, I utilize a lot of news aggregators. It kind of feeds me, you know, shows me all the information or the news that are noteworthy. And I will tell you, decline in sperm is just a headline that I'd see over and over every couple of weeks. You just get another, you know, news article on it. And it's a phenomenon that, you know, I think it's very relevant in our time where there are, you know, aside from declining sperm rates, but just declining fertility rates around the world in general, right? You know, who knows if this is just a, you know, becoming of a modern society. But, you know, Justin and I, we deal with sperm on a daily basis as male fertility docs. And I can't tell you that more and more, at least to me, I would feel like it, that we're seeing more and more patients in their reproductive years with lower sperm counts. Now, we may be just biased because we're seeing these patients because we're the specialists, but it seems like it's happening more and more. Or am I wrong, Justin?
I don't know. I am someone who, I'm a skeptic in terms of everything for a lot of these things. And I think that, you know, having Dr. Swanen, I enjoy her book. She's got a very convincing argument. Her data is very strong. And as you know, this is a topic that comes up literally at every conference Kevin and I go to.
Yeah.
There is a debate on whether sperm is truly declining. And there's criticisms of her paper. There's criticisms of other papers. There's criticisms of all these things. But I do find the data compelling, and I do think that there is a trend that is concerning. And I think the trend that you have to see here, and we talk about, is in general, it seems that health is on the decline. And if you've listened to this podcast enough, you understand that, you know, we've explained that your fertility, especially for men, is a window into your overall health. Things that like diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, you know, eating poorly, the getting, you know, exposure to chemicals that you probably shouldn't get exposed to are all things that can compromise your health and can therefore compromise your fertility. So in a society where more people are overweight, more people have diabetes at younger ages, people are waiting to get to have kids at an older age. Is it the craziest thing? And am I, you know, am I shocked to go back to what Dr. Smith said? Is the answer is no, I'm not surprised by the data. But is it a doomsday prophecy? I don't know. You know, and that's the question that I have, Kev. I always ask, is this, you know, people are like, this is the end. What is this? And I think that what I would take away from this episode is that it's a warning. It's really a warning for us to understand that, you know, our health is not only for us, but it's for our futures. It's for our families. And it's something that we really need to consider today so you don't have those problems tomorrow.
On the other side, look, I agree with you. I agree with you. And I definitely don't want to treat this as like an alarmist thing. Like you say, you were just like, you know, red flag up, you know, this is, populations are going to end everywhere because like sperm counts are going to zero. Everyone's sperm counts are zero. Absolutely not. But I think it's very important, and I think we'll touch more on this on the second part of this conversation with Dr. Swan. But, you know, really exposures in this world that we have that we kind of just say is fine, more and more, I'll tell you, and maybe it's because I've now spent 2 years here in California. It's much more, you know, present where they talk about this. But I think environmental exposures, we can't just say that like, nah, we really have not much evidence, you know, looking at or against and saying that it's fine and it's not causing issues towards your health, right?
Yeah.
And like you state, fertility is such a window into it. Maybe this is our peek into it that like, hey, look, you know, these things that we've been ingesting for like 25, 30 years thought to be okay, maybe might not be okay. We thought smoking was fine for the longest time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Now we don't touch it, right? Right. Well, we recommend not to touch it, you know? So
it's interesting. And I think that people are really going to enjoy this episode. I think you're going to learn a lot. And I think it's really important for both men and women actually to understand this conversation, because I think she does mention a bit on how this does impact female health as well. There are implications for a lot of the things that are going on. And so, yeah, I think there's not much more to say. I do think that, you know, we do bring up a couple potential criticisms, but about the paper, but about her papers, but she has a lot of compelling evidence, like we said, and, you know, we'll allow you guys to make your own conclusions about what's going on, because that's what we're here for. We're here to educate you with the information. But I do recommend you read the book. I read it. I enjoyed it. And it's quite thoughtful and it does make you think. And like you said, I think this second episode with the endocrine disrupting chemicals, truthfully, it kind of scared the shit out of me. And not a bad way, but like, I guess a bad way. But, you know, as you'll learn, everything that we, especially in the United States, we're really exposed to a lot of bad stuff. We really are.
It just, you know, if anything, at least just allows yourself to question, right? Doesn't mean you have to believe, but just question. Yeah. Just question.
Yeah.
So, you know, enjoy it. And, you know, I think with this episode in particular, if you guys are watching on YouTube or whatever, leave some comments. Like this is one, like really at the end, we got, you know, we have evidence, both sides. That's what we're presenting. But we love to hear comments and, you know, stuff to hear from our listeners about this.
Yeah, this is an exciting one. I'm always interested on our listeners' thoughts. But for sure, I agree, Kevin. Leave a comment on our socials, at the Man Up Pod on TikTok, Instagram, at Man Up Pod, I'm sorry, on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. Follow us on YouTube, subscribe, download, and give us a comment of what you think about the episode, whether you believe that, you know, fertility rates are declining and, you know, whether you really enjoyed the episode and what your thoughts were. So otherwise, thanks for listening. Enjoy till next time. Guys, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably interested in learning about your health. When it comes to understanding your fertility, there's no better test than the semen analysis.
For a long time, however, the process of getting a semen analysis was difficult. There were not many places to get it done, and when you were able to, you'd have to go to an office, uncomfortably provide a sample in a cold, sterile facility. Nothing easy or fun about that.
Fortunately, there is a new and better way to provide a semen analysis, and that's with Fellow. Through Fellow, you get an at-home semen analysis kit that sends you reliable results in less than 2 business days after providing a sample in the comfort of your home. And guess what? If you had a vasectomy and need to confirm that you are sperm-free, you can do that with Fellow from the comfort of your home, too.
That's right. No more awkward trips to the office. No more worries about finding a doctor who provides these services. Simply go to meetfellow.com. That is meetfellow.com and order your semen analysis or post-vasectomy semen analysis kit, and they will ship it directly to your home.
Listen, we both love using Fellow for our patients, but the best part is you don't even need a script. Just go to meetfellow.com and purchase it online yourself. So if you or your partner are interested in learning more about your fertility status, check out Fellow at meetfellow.com and purchase a kit today.
So we are very honored to be joined by Dr. Swan to talk about something very interesting that Justin, I still remember when he first read the book and he sent me a text message about it, said, you got to read this. So Dr. Swan, thank you so much for joining us. Justin and I are very honored to have you on.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. So we're going to jump into the first question. And I just want to give our listeners a better understanding of your background as an epidemiologist. So before we delve into the research, can you just explain what an epidemiologist is?
Oh my goodness. Well, first of all, people know about epidemiology these days because of COVID, right? But that's not what I do, right? So that's infectious disease epidemiology, which is not what I do. So the other sort of big category of epidemiology is chronic disease. And chronic disease includes lots of things like cancer and heart disease and also reproductive function. So narrowing it down now, we're now in chronic disease, now we're in reproductive function. And I've been involved in studying female and male reproductive function. But in recent years, I've been focusing on male reproductive function. So that's kind of, yeah.
And basically, you're just taking a lot of data out there. You're accumulating a lot of data and trying to see a big picture, a big pattern of what's going on and try to, based on your question, you're identifying, you know, what you think the answer may be pretty much. And you've been really a person at the forefront of when we're talking about male infertility and also female fertility in, you know, recognizing patterns, identifying issues and figuring out ways in which we can really, you know, do better. So I want to start off with the paper that really brought up this concept of declining fertility, which has really become one of the biggest topics, I would say, in the last 5-10 years for sure. Right. I mean, so you published a now very famous paper called Temporal Trends in Sperm Count and, you know, a systematic review and a meta regression analysis. It showed a decline in sperm count among men unselected by fertility from North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand from 1973 to 2011. Can you kind of explain the study, what you did, and what you guys found as a result?
Okay, so let me just say this was definitely not the first paper to talk about declines in fertility and male reproductive function and sperm count. I would say the most well-known one and the one that triggered my interest was in 1992, came out of Copenhagen, and it was on sperm concentration, and they showed pretty much what we showed in our paper, that there had been this very significant decline of about 50% in 50 years. And that paper was not a meta-analysis, because meta-analysis actually back in 92 was not sort of a term of, it's not what people did at that point.
Right.
But it was a review of the literature. And when I first saw it, I have to say I was skeptical. I actually didn't.
Interesting.
I didn't believe it, actually. And I spent a lot of time trying to make it go away. So that's what one of these epidemiologists do. They say, okay, here's a finding. And the authors say that this decline is due to, you know, this is temporal. It's occurring over time. But then I come in and I say, well, maybe it's because the methods have changed over time, the methods of counting sperm, or maybe the methods of recruiting the men has changed over time, or maybe the men themselves have changed. So maybe they're fatter now or older now, or, you know, things that can affect sperm count. So,
right.
So what I did was spend 6 months looking at all these possible, what we call confounders, and seeing if I could make the trend go away. And the remarkable thing was, after 6 months of pretty hard work with two colleagues, we didn't move the needle at all, actually not to the second decimal place. So that is pretty impressive, because it says all the confounders we could think of that we could assess in those published studies, by the way, some things we couldn't, but the ones we could didn't change. So then I said, okay, now maybe it's real, right?
Right.
And then the next step is to say, you know, why? And I'm not going to go into that now, because that's maybe another discussion we'll come to. Right. But several years later, it was around 2014, I was at a conference with some colleagues, and one of them, Hagai Levine, and I were having coffee, and he said, what about that 1992 paper? Shouldn't we update that? And I said, yeah, that's a good idea, right? Yeah, let's do that. And so we started this meta-analysis. We put a group together. We got 7 people all over the world who were going to work on this. By the way, pro bono, nobody got paid for this. And we put in 2 years of doing this intensive literature search with the help of a wonderful librarian, reference librarian. And what we did was took out all of these eligible, and we can talk about that if you want, but eligible studies to see whether sperm count had declined. And the bottom line was yes. And it was just pretty much the same as had been published out of Denmark in 1992, this 1% per year. And by the way, this 1% per year, I call this the 1% effect, because it's showing up so many places. It's showing up in infertility. It's showing up in testosterone decline. Right. And even miscarriage, by the way, is about the same decline. So it suggests some common causes, you know, that's driving all of these things. So let me stop there. And I'm not sure I answered all of your question, but
I think that was a really excellent explanation of what you did. So, but let's kind of go into, you know, that paper. So specifically, what, how, like sperm concentration, how much percent were we seeing it drop over that time period, as well as sperm count. How much percent were we seeing that drop?
Well, it's about 50% in 50 years, which is beautiful, simple, 1% per year, 50-50, right?
Right.
Yeah. And let me just say, because it might come up, why did we pick concentration?
Right.
Okay. Right. And so, first of all, that's what's most frequently reported and people are most concerned about. But also the methods for measuring sperm concentration have not changed for a very long time. So the hemocytometer, which is a, you know, the machine used to measure, was originally used to measure white count in 1912, white blood cells.
Wow.
So it's been around for a very long time. It's very simple. It's very simple. You just have to have a skilled technician to, I mean, I was trained to count sperm because I wanted to know, you know, how to do that. So I learned that. And it's hard, isn't it? I mean, you guys have done it, right?
It can be hard, especially if they're very motile. It can be very hard.
Right? It's tedious, you know?
So, you know, the other things we could have looked at, motility, morphology, and more complicated things like, you know, DNA fragmentation and so on. Those are more difficult and the methods have changed over time. So we wanted something where it wasn't changing methods that could explain our decline. We wanted something that was the same. And so we required that they say they use this hemocytometer, and almost all of them said they use the WHO methods. And your audience probably doesn't know, but this hemocytometer count and this method has been standardized by the World Health Organization to be the go-to method. And that's what we used. And that's why we concentrated on concentration so that we would have this, you know, consistency of method.
So I'm going to I'm gonna jump into actually something on that World Health Organization and semen analysis. And you kind of touch upon it on your book. So can you talk about like how the changes in what we consider a normal sperm count or concentration has changed over time?
Right. So I mentioned the World Health Organization, and they have some cutoffs for what's normal and what's abnormal. And it turns out that this number has come down over time, which is so interesting.
Very interesting.
Why would they have to do that if there wasn't a decline in function? So it started at 40 million per milliliter. And below that was considered abnormal. And then it went down to 25 and now 15.
15. We're at 15.
Right? And so obviously things are getting worse because 40 was abnormal then. Why is it normal now?
It's like the same thing with blood pressure. I feel like with blood pressure, you know, it was like 110s, 70 initially. And it's like increased now to 120s. So we keep upping it. I don't know if it's because things are going the way we're not wanting it to head. I'm not sure, but.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent point. It really makes you think about, you know, what the big picture is. And it seems like the trends are being recognized as, you know, your paper has obviously, you know, recognized. And it seems like the World Health Organization has also somewhat come to terms with that as well. Now, what's interesting, what's really cool is that you had the 2017 paper, but now in this last year, you actually published a follow-up meta-analysis, you know, study looking at sperm count from 1973 to now 2018. The previous one ended at 2011. And in addition, you know, the original study only really looked at, you know, Eastern, you know, North America, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. You now included Asia, Africa, you know, East Asia to see if this was just, you know, kind of a Western culture trend versus a truly global trend. And now in this updated study, what did you guys find?
Well, what we found was two things. One is that the countries that we didn't have enough data on originally. And by the way, we did look worldwide originally, but it's just that there were too few studies out of Asia and South America and Africa to say anything about those. And so there wasn't statistically solid. We couldn't make it. But now we could. And now we found a significant decline in those countries as well. So now we can say this is a worldwide decline. So that's one really big thing that's come out of this 22 study. And the other thing is that the rate of increase of decrease has picked up. So there's now, after 2000, the decline is over 2% per year, whereas initially it was 1% per year. So we have, since 2000, a doubling of the rate of decline. That's kind of alarming, you know. Yeah.
So yeah, you mentioned alarming, right? You mentioned alarming, and we, as Justin mentioned, you know, we see like a lot of media articles on it. You're going to have a lot of TV segments on it. So for our listeners, if I ask you, how concerned should we be about these findings? What would you say?
I'm extremely concerned about these findings. I think what this means is that if you are concerned about men whose sperm count is below 45, for example, which I am because of the studies showing that the probability of conception in any given cycle drops pretty rapidly below that, we're saying that men, an increasing proportion of men in the world, are going to take a very long time to conceive or not conceive at all, and will have to turn to assisted reproduction. And I think that has a lot of implications. It has social implications, and it has implications for your field. Obviously, you've got your hands full now.
Yeah.
But I just want to stress the fact that people who are poorer, who are disadvantaged, who don't have access to these, you know, these alternatives, and don't have money to pay for them, they can't. So I think the basic human right, which is to be able to have a child if you want to. If you want to is another question. We can turn to that. But if you want to, you should have the right, and it should not be taken away because of what I feel are chemicals that are threatening our fertility. But that's another, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that for sure. Now, I just to piggyback off of that idea of declining fertility, and, you know, a lot of people may say, and this is just something that I've started thinking about, and people saying like, well, you know, your sperm count may declining, but I'm at above that threshold. Well, a lot of studies, as you were suggesting, Dr. Swan, you know, we know that, you know, more is better when it comes to sperm. You know, it's not one of those situations where you're above a threshold, you're at 15 million or you're at 40 million and you have the same level of fertility. You actually don't. We do know that truly more sperm is better in every way. So, you know, when it comes to a lot of the things that are concerning, these things potentially could be impacting you right now, even if you do have lower levels.
Right.
So there is an idea behind that. I don't know, Kevin.
Yeah.
You said,
like to ask you, as clinicians, would you agree? I say, based on the data that I've seen, that after some point, and by that point might be 70 or 80 or 90, more is not necessarily better. So whether you have a count, because I just look at the probability, you know, of conception per cycle, and mm-hmm. after, I would say 85 or 90, it doesn't make any, it's flat. The probability does not go up. So at some point, I don't think it's true that more is better. I think we have more than we need at some point, but many men are not at that point.
I think there was a paper that came out about a year and a half ago by the whole team in Utah, Jim Hotaling. I think they did a paper, was in like Human Repro, that did show that even at that level, that there was an increase in fertility rates. Don't take my word exactly. I don't know the threshold for that, but it was surprising. I remember reviewing that paper.
Interesting.
There was something.
You can send that to me. Could you?
I'll have to take a look. I have it somewhere.
Yeah. That's great. Because what I'm referring to is an early paper, quite an old paper, of family planners. And in that study, these were people who had never tried to conceive before. They went off contraception in order to conceive, and they were very carefully tracked, you know, how many months it took. And that was related to their sperm count. And like I say, in that data, the author is Bond, by the way, B-O-N-D-E, Jens Peter Bond from Denmark. But those studies are very hard. It's very hard to get a pregnancy planners. So that's great. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's, why don't we start, let's shift over and let's start talking about, you know, as you've kind of touched upon a little earlier in our conversation, what do you think are the main contributors to declining fertility rates?
Ah, that's so hard, Kevin. I mean, to say what's the main, what I can tell you is some factors that we know affect sperm count and fertility. And by the way, I like to separate sperm count and fertility because fertility is complicated, isn't it?
It's right.
Couple.
Yes.
That's a good point.
So it's difficult. But I would say, first of all, there's lifestyle factors. And those are, as you well know, but just to go over them, you know, so there's diet matters, stress matters, body weight matters, exercise matters. And it turns out that most of the things that matter for your heart also matter for your sperm. So I think that sort of a good rule of thumb is, you know, if your GP will tell you, well, for your heart health, do X, Y, and Z, you're going to be helping your sperm as well, right?
What's good for your heart is good for your parts. That's what we like to say.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's important, not to belittle that at all. But then I turn to the area where I've spent most of my time in the last 20 years, which is the area of chemicals that our bodies can confuse with our natural hormones. And the reason that's concerning is because the hormones, particularly the sex steroid hormones, are absolutely critical for what we're talking about, sperm count, reproduction, and fertility, and so forth. So if you have chemicals enter your body that are confusing our body's hormones, I like to call them hormone mimics, they're, you know, taking the place of, if you will, say, an androgen, then your body is going to decrease the production of that androgen. And so what we showed first was that several of these chemicals, and the most dramatic result was with the chemicals that are called phthalates, and those are chemicals that make plastic soft and flexible. These are anti-androgens. They lower testosterone, okay? And it turns out that all this stuff is set up in the male in the first trimester, probably the first couple of weeks of the first trimester, but we don't know. We haven't pinpointed that very clearly in humans. We have in rats, by the way. In rats, it's only 3 days. The days 9 through 12, I mean, or I can't remember exactly, but it's 3 days in early pregnancy in the rat, different in the mouse, but it's a sensitive period. And that's the period when the testes are producing the testosterone, which goes to produce the differentiation of the genital tract. Okay, so let me just back up and say, in the embryo originally, the genital tract is a single ridge. It's not different in males and females. I'm telling your listeners, you guys.
Right, yeah, no,
this is great.
This is good. This is great.
And so at some point this in early pregnancy, the testes wake up under a genetic cue and they start producing testosterone. And if it's a genetic male, okay. And then what happens is you have this differentiation where what will be the ovary in the female becomes the testes in the male and so on and so forth. Right?
Right.
And you see then the separation of the male and female genitalia. Okay. What happens if there isn't testosterone and there isn't enough testosterone? Well, it turns out that the default is female. So it requires, the male requires adequate testosterone at the right time, and the timing is really critical, to differentiate in the male typical manner. Okay? So this is a lot Very important stuff happening very early in pregnancy. And if you mess with that by introducing a chemical that can decrease testosterone, you will interfere with that process. And as a result, what happens? We get something called the phthalate syndrome. So this is so brilliant. I did not name this. This was a group of researchers, actually two groups, one at EPA and one at National Toxicology Program, and they demonstrated this and called it the phthalate syndrome. Now, if you look at the literature, there's no other environmental chemical that has a syndrome named after it. It's really special, you know? And what they found was, yes, the male genitals were less completely masculinized. They resembled the female more, okay? And depending on how much they missed the androgen and so on, it's a question of degree. So it turns out that the penis is smaller, the testicles are smaller, the testicles are more likely to be undescended. So these are all things that happen under the influence of testosterone. But the most dramatic thing is the thing that I hooked on to after hearing about it in this animal study, was that the distance from the anus to the genitals, AGD, known in the street as Gooch and Grundle.
The ABC, right? Yep.
Right? The street first. That is going to be shorter in the male than it would be otherwise. And so why do we care about that? Well, what's really beautiful about this measure is that it's like a readout of the test of the how much androgen was in the womb at that time. Okay. We can't look in there. You can't go in there and look. It's a closed system, right? Mm-hmm. But what it reads this out for you. And by the way, let me just say, it's on the female side too. So it turns out that women who have PCOS and thus have higher testosterone have girls who have a longer, a more masculine AGD.
Wow, I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Beautiful, right? I mean, it works both ways. Androgen is androgen. It affects everybody, males and females, right? And so if you knock this down in a male, you'll see this shorter AGD. So what's normal? Normal is in almost every mammal, the male will have a 50 to 100% longer AGD.
Okay.
You want to know an exception? It's the hyena. But never mind. Yes, in one case, in hyenas, the female is the alpha. So it's not surprising.
Interesting.
Wow, that's fascinating.
So there you are. You the mother is exposed to these phthalates, and we could talk about how, but everyone is. And her male then is developing in a less male tip. By the way, it affects the brain as well. So the brain also needs androgen, and that's a whole other story, which we won't go into today. But I just want to make you aware and your listeners aware that the genitals don't develop in a vacuum, right? And what's happening is going to affect the entire, it turns out your whole life. Because it turns out if you have a lower sperm count and if you're less fertile, you're going to die younger. I don't know if you know this literature. Actually, Mike Eisenberg did one of those studies. So men with low sperm count, low fertility, and then in Denmark, they showed women with low fertility have higher mortality, shorter life expectancy. So what's happening in early pregnancy? Let's sum this up. Early pregnancy, mother's exposed to things that decrease her testosterone. It's going to affect her offspring for their whole life. It's pretty dramatic.
It's pretty dramatic. It's a pretty wild and important statement. And, you know, when you hear that and you think about all the other things that, you know, partners and couples are doing to reduce the risk of harm to children, you know, this is something that sounds like really needs to be considered as well. For sure.
Yes.
You know, when I first, like, you know, read your papers and started looking more at phthalates and stuff, it is crazy to know, like, how much this stuff is everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. Like we talk about, like I was looking at like IVs that we start in the hospital have phthalates, at least in the US. They have, in the US. It's crazy. You know, I was like, wow, it's everywhere.
Your hospital is loaded with it, right? All the bags. So if you see a soft tube, a soft tube, whether it's in your hospital or it's in a factory or in a milking machine, they show that cows that are milked by hand have no phthalates in the milk. But if you milk those cows through a milking machine, which has plastic tubing, you'll measure the phthalates in the milk. It's a no-brainer. The phthalates are not chemically bound to the matrix. So particularly when there's something going through fluid, which is warm and, you know, wet, they hop out, they go into the fluid, and then you got them. You got it in the NICU. Babies in the NICU have a lot of tubing, soft tubing. We can measure and have measured phthalates in the urine of these babies, right? So it's all everywhere. It's everywhere. But I would say that the pregnant woman's exposure, and by the way, the man's exposure in the run-up to conception, so that 60-day, 70-day period when the sperm is being formed, is sensitive to this as well. And that was shown in Harvard by the Earth Study. It's very important. It's not just the woman. So this has been great. I think we pretty much covered it. Yeah. And I thank you for letting me speak to you and speak to your listeners. And we're all on the same
page. Of course. Well, listen, I just want to give you one more shout out. Tell our listeners where they can find you. Tell us, you know, where they can find your book, because I think this has been an incredibly informative session with you, and I really learned a lot, and it's been really eye-opening for us as well.
Great. Well, thank you, Justin. Countdown is my book. If you look it up, you have to remember it's two words. Count with a C and down with a capital D, because there's other books that are a single word. So that's not me. You can send an email to me at info@shaunaswan.com, and probably I'll answer you.
That's awesome. Honestly, this was really fantastic. You know, maybe we'll have you on again, because I think we could always continue talking about this, but we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today. Kevin, any final comments?
No, Dr. Swan, thank you so much for coming on. This is a very, very interesting topic that Justin and I always sit and just talk and just debate about. And it's very interesting. So thank you. Thank you for your time.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. As always, any questions, comments, concerns, please feel free to email us at themanuppod@gmail.com. Check out our Instagram @themanuppod, TikTok, Twitter, all of that @themanuppod, YouTube. Download, subscribe. You can listen to this episode and all our other episodes on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon as well. Thanks for listening, guys. Until next time.